So firstly, I want to make some pre-message comments, especially to guests and to people who are new to New Life Church. That's a bit of history. During the 4th century under the Roman Emperor Constantine, the celebration of Jesus' death and resurrection was intentionally separated from the biblical festival of Passover. That had been in the 4th century. And this new event that was created was named Easter. And it was deliberately named something completely different to sever its connection to Passover and the Jews. This was very unfortunate. In recent years, God has led many Christians to restore this severed link. And in 2010, New Life Church, we realigned our remembrance of Jesus' death and resurrection to the biblical festival of Passover. So for those of you that are new and been wondering why we haven't been making much of a big deal about Easter, it's because we're waiting for Passover. The biblical festivals follow the lunar calendar, and in 2024, the Passover festival is a full month later than Easter. Now, we gave a detailed explanation of this leap year gap and how that works. That was distributed to all of the people that are in our house churches. So all of you in house church, you've got the house church plan for everyone. Hopefully you've memorized why this gap exists. And that information is available to anyone on request by calling our office. So as a church in 2010, we began retelling the Passover story and its connection to Jesus' death and resurrection. And we will do that again, as we have done for many, many years, with daily devotionals that will commence on April the 13th. And look, those of you that are on our email list, you will get these in a digital form, and you'll get the audio recording. They're all being audio recorded as well. And there's a printed booklet as well. And some of us really love having a printed booklet on our dining room table to use, and that's available for a small purchase price of $5. And I want to encourage you, if you haven't already ordered a copy, to do that. Because as you go through the daily readings, and the readings begin before Passover, they lead up to Passover, and then we continue the readings all the way through to Pentecost, because the biblical festivals spread from Passover to Pentecost to what we call Shelters, or the Festival of Tabernacles, in October, or September, October this year. So we're telling the story, and you'll gain so much more insight and understanding. If this is all brand new to you, people, jump in with both feet, examine the scriptures, and you begin to see that actually there is this wonderful and glorious connection from creation to Christ to the new creation that's coming. And so that's what we do. We are one of those people that are restoring Jesus' death and resurrection to Passover, because it's essential for understanding what God has done and will do. It really is. If you don't understand the connection between Jesus' death and resurrection and Passover, you won't understand fully the biblical story of what's happened in the past and what is coming as well, because there's a lot of overlap. I'll just leave it at that. However, having said all that, today there are many Christians around the world that are engaging with Easter, and celebrating today the resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth from the dead. That day when Jesus' tomb was found empty, the place where his body had been laid was empty. The Roman government seal that was on the door was broken, because one of God's angels had rolled the huge stone blocking that entry to one side, and the soldiers had fainted with fear, and Jesus' body wasn't there. I love that. And always take an opportunity, whenever the Bible mentions angels, people faint. No one goes, "Oh, that's so cute." So forget all the cute angel pictures you see around the place. They are devastatingly brilliant and bright and majestic and strong. You don't want to be on the wrong side of them. Now, some of you might have seen the 2016 movie Risen, which starred Joseph Fiennes as Clavius, the Roman tribune charged with finding the body of Jesus. Clavius had killed many men as a warrior, and he was there when Jesus died on the cross. And Clavius knows that dead people, none of the people that he's ever killed before, have come back to life. So he's convinced that the body has been stolen. How many of you have seen this movie? Lots of you have, so you're familiar with it, and I'm sure it's available for those that haven't, and I encourage you to watch it. So like a relentless investigator, Clavius hunts down all the known associates of Jesus to interrogate them. And as he pressures them in the interrogation, they offer one single explanation. They don't know where he is. He's alive. He's resurrected from the dead. This is really important. Christianity is the only religion that has a verifiable historical miracle at the heart of it. The physical resurrection of Jesus from the dead after a very public and humiliating death confirms that two things. He is the Messiah of Israel and he is the world's true Lord. He's the king over all kings. He's the judge over all the living and the dead. And so Jesus' resurrection was a huge problem for the religious and political leaders, so they paid the soldiers to lie about what happened. Because they understood that if Jesus was resurrected from the dead, because he had promised that he was going to do that, and we read from Matthew 28, we read the first 14 verses, but if you just drift back several verses into Matthew 27, you'll see that this was part of the argument that the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pontius Pilate with to say that he said he's going to be dead and come back after 3 days. We have to stop that happening because the disciples will steal his body and they'll claim he'll be resurrected from the dead, and then we've got a bigger problem. So put some troops around the tomb so that that can't happen. Because if that happens, we're in big trouble. Now we know that Jesus was resurrected. And we know that this confronts many people. And one of the things is that many people have actually set out to disprove Jesus' resurrection. And they've actually ended up writing books of how they became convinced in their pursuit of proving that Jesus didn't rise from the dead, that it became convinced on the basis of the evidence that he did rise from the dead. And they became worshippers of Jesus during that process. Now, over the course of my years, which are many, I've examined probably every accusation that Jesus' resurrection is false. I've looked at every single thing that's been offered that I've got my hands on. Now, I didn't do that because I wanted to prove that it didn't happen or because I doubted, but because I wanted to face the evidence. And so I want to encourage you, parents, if your children are asking questions or even if you got questions, I want to tell you, the evidence abounds. Don't be afraid of the hard questions. There's plenty of evidence for this available and more. And what I discovered when I looked at every single theory that was put up about why Jesus didn't physically rise from the dead, I found that every single one had a fatal flaw that ignored evidence and facts. You see, they started with the presupposition that Jesus did not physically rise from the dead. And therefore, they filtered out all the evidence that supported that and just held to some flimsy stuff. And as I went on this journey, my confidence in the biblical truth that Jesus was resurrected from the dead, that he is alive, it grew stronger and stronger. Not just because I know him personally, because I surrendered my own life to him as a child, but because of the evidence. So let me show you a few resources if you want to do your own work. The first one is a book called Evidence That Demands a Verdict. Now, this has just been republished a couple of years ago. It's by Josh and Sean McDowell. And Sean McDowell, you can find his website, and he's got a truckload of resources there. But Josh, so that's Sean's dad, he was an atheist. He was one of these ones that set out to disprove Christianity while studying at university. And as he pursued that, his research led him to conclude that the evidence supported the truth of the Bible. Hence the name of his book, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, Volume 1. He kept researching and he produced a second volume, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, Volume 2. Now they're compiled into a single volume. It's a very large one. It's about one of those books that is about that thick. There's a whole lot of reliable historical evidence for a whole range of questions about the Bible and about God and Jesus. And Josh's son, Sean, did his own PhD research, and he currently teaches classes on cultural, ethical, theological and apologetics at Biola University in California. Number two on my list is a book called Leading Lawyers for the Resurrection by Dr. Ross Clifford. Ross is an Australian, and Julie and I had the blessing of hosting Ross in our home in 1990 in Katanning for a week when he came from Sydney and trained our congregation there. And in this book, what Ross does is he selects some of the most prominent lawyers of modern times to sift through the evidence and the claims. And what he says in his book is that the evidence would convince a court of law. That's the question that he's put. Would the evidence convince a court of law? And he answers in the affirmative. So if you're interested in legal argument for Jesus' resurrection, not that it's complex or anything to understand, but if you want to have a look at it from that perspective, you'll find that book very helpful. Another book is Cold Case Christianity, which is subtitled A Homicide Detective Investigates the Claims of the Gospel. Werner Wallace was a devout atheist, and he couldn't believe imagining in the Christian faith until he applied the step-by-step process he had for solving crime cases as a homicide detective in Los Angeles, America, and he took that skill set and he applied it to the search for the truth about Christianity. Hence the name of his book, Cold Case Christianity. For 25 years, he was solving cold cases using the facts and the evidence, and he applied that to the light. So here, the 10 common rules of evidence that he'd used to solve crimes throughout his career, and it came to the point where he realised he could no longer deny the truth of Jesus Christ. And Werner's life has never been the same. Finally, Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus by Nabil Qureshi. Nabil was raised in a loving Muslim home, and in this book he shares how he developed a passion for Islam before discovering, almost against his will, evidence that Jesus rose from the dead and claimed to be God. He was actually trained as an Islamic evangelist. And when he was in high school, he would chew up the Christian students and spit them out. He would refute everything they had, and he was really pleased with that. When he went to university, he met a man who not only could spar with him intellectually and take on all of his arguments head on and defeat them and show the flaws in them and show the excellencies of Jesus and the power of the biblical truth. He then got to a point where he was unable to deny the arguments and he embraced it as truth. But then he was left with that dilemma, the emotional dilemma of what would happen, because he knew his family would disown him. But eventually he found the truth undeniable and he chose Christ over Allah. Let me quickly run through some pieces of evidence. I don't know what your position is here today. Some of you might already be convinced, some of you might be skeptical, some might be on the journey. But I want to just say very clearly that the evidence available to substantiate the Bible's claim that Jesus was physically resurrected from the dead and is the Lord of heaven and earth is irrefutable, if you take it and deal with it as it is. So one of the first things you want to deal with is the Bible as a historical witness. It is a reliable historical witness. Heaps of archaeological finds about that. But just one example will show you. We have about 66,000 parts of the Bible or whole books of the Bible from antiquity, 66,000 manuscript copies of some parts of it, or all of it. Okay. Just for an example, the closest nearest equivalent for the same time period has 2,000. And some of those works, some of those ancient works, no one ever questions their historical reliability. It's never asked. But yet there's very few copies of those manuscripts available. The Bible's been put through this rigorous and exhausting critical analysis process and showing time and time again from the manuscript evidence, from archaeological evidence, the things that have been turned up around the Middle East, confirming over and over again the reliability and the historical accuracy of the Bible. What about the accusation that Jesus didn't actually die on the cross? This is a common one. Now, Islam actually teaches that Jesus didn't die on the cross. But what Allah did was actually swap him out for another man who looked like him, so that everyone there thought it was Jesus, but it wasn't actually Jesus. How he did that, the Quran never tells us. But according to the Quran, Allah deceived the Jews and Romans into believing they were crucifying Jesus. His name is Isa in Arabic, but it was only someone who looked like him. Now, you just have to stop for a minute and go, hang on a minute. Muhammad was somewhere around the 700s. He's 600 and something years after Jesus. No one's ever heard of this man called Muhammad. No one's ever heard of this idea until almost 700 years after the event. All the reliable historical witnesses are that it was Jesus of Nazareth that was hung on that cross on that day. Another theory about Jesus not dying is what's called the swoon theory. And this is one of those fairly mythological, if you like, or magical theories. Because it's like, okay, Jesus was beaten with 39 lashes. If that didn't kill people, they were almost dead. He then carries his crossbeam up a hill. He then gets nailed to a cross. He hangs on that cross for 6 hours. In the excruciating position that crucifixion happens, because the Romans perfected this torture technique. It existed before them, but they perfected it. So he hangs there for 6 hours and dies, surrounded by Roman soldiers who know exactly what death looks like. And if the person on the cross doesn't die in the time allotted to them, they take an axe and they shatter this bone here. Is it the femur? That'll do. Thanks. They shatter that bone there so they can no longer, because they're hung in a position so that it's almost impossible for them to breathe. They have to pull themselves up, and after 6 hours of that in the hot sun, it's an impossibility, and Jesus dies. But some people want to say, no, Jesus just passed out. He just lost consciousness, and all the people there thought he was dead. And then when he was put in that cold tomb, that revived him. Well, that'd be a miracle all by itself, wouldn't it? 39 lashes, crucified, that like coming up. That'd be enough, right? But not only that, he then was able, in that weakened condition of his body brutally beaten, he was able to move a 2-ton stone, force his way out, fight past the Roman soldiers, defeat them, and then disappear. Wow. That's a miracle. It really is. Like, to think of that even as a possibility just defies all logic. So one of the other pieces of evidence is the fact that the empty tomb, was discovered by women. Let me tell you, in a patriarchal Middle Eastern society, if you want to establish credibility of something, I'm sorry, ladies, we don't make you the eyewitnesses. I'm sorry that in a patriarchal society, you're not valid as eyewitnesses. Islam still holds this today. So the fact that the Gospels say it was women is part of the evidence for the proof that it's true, because you wouldn't do that if you were making it up. So one for the women. Hallelujah. So then we go on to the resurrection appearances of Jesus. So before I go into the resurrection appearances, let me just say, I again want to commend to you that watch the movie Risen and the search for Jesus' body. It's a fascinating film to watch. Anyway, resurrection appearances. So we've got evidence that Jesus appeared multiple times over a 6-week period, but in unusual ways. He was seen by the two Marys, as we know. He was seen several times by the disciples, including appearing in a locked room where the doors were all locked. And he ate a meal. So it wasn't a hallucination and it wasn't a spirit. He ate something there and then he disappeared. But the food left with him. The food he ate didn't stay in the room. That'd be pretty messy, wouldn't it? So Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, said, I passed on to you what was most important and what had also been passed on to me. Christ died for our sins, just as the scriptures said. He was buried and he was raised from the dead on the third day, just as the scriptures said. He was seen by Peter and then by the 12, and after that he was seen by more than 500 of his followers at one time, most of whom are still alive, although some have died. And Paul goes on. So in other words, there was an occasion where 500 people saw Jesus alive in his resurrected body. Our skeptics will offer different theories about this. One is that it's complete fiction and all made up by desperate people who desperately want to believe that Jesus was resurrected from the dead. They're so committed to that, they're doing anything they can. Another explanation is that these people all were hallucinating. I've never taken hallucinogenic drugs, but I've read and heard testimony of people, and as far as I'm aware, no one who takes hallucinogenic drugs, even if you're sitting side by side, have the same hallucination. 500 people at the same time with no drugs having the same hallucination is not possible. Finally, we've got the fact that Jesus' disciples, as he's crucified, they're running and hiding. After he's crucified, they're making his crucifixion and his resurrection the very centerpiece of their message. They stand in the temple in Jerusalem and they boldly declare and they say, this Jesus who you crucified, God raised him from the dead, has made him both Lord and Messiah. Now that was guaranteed to get them in trouble. So you don't say things that you don't believe are true. You don't put your life at risk for something that is not true. Who dies for a lie? You only die for a lie if you believe it's the truth. These men died for truth. They couldn't keep this. I love this quote by Charles Colson. Some of you are too young to know who he is. It's coming up on the screen. I know the resurrection is a fact, and Watergate proved it. Now, let me just say this. Chuck Colson was one of the lawyers. He was one of President Richard Nixon's hatchet men, is what he was called. Went to jail after the Watergate scandal. He says, I know the resurrection is a fact, and Watergate proved it to me. How? Because 12 men testified they'd seen Jesus raised from the dead. Then they proclaimed that truth for 40 years, never once denying it. Every one of them was beaten, tortured, stoned, and put in prison. They would not have endured it if it weren't true. Watergate embroiled 12 of the most powerful men in the world, and they couldn't keep a lie for 3 weeks. You're telling me 12 apostles could keep a lie for 40 years? Absolutely impossible. So, Jesus' resurrection matters to you for 2 reasons, and I'll finish with these. Firstly, because the resurrection proclaims that Jesus is Lord. It confirms that he is the Messiah of Israel and the world's true Lord. Daniel, in a vision, in Daniel 7, it's recorded that he saw the man coming on the clouds of heaven, a man given authority, honor, and sovereignty over all the nations of the world. so that people of every race and nation and language would obey him. He saw a man whose rule is eternal, it will never end. A man whose kingdom will never be destroyed. That man was Jesus. Jesus is greater than Buddha, greater than Muhammad's Allah, greater than the gods of Hinduism, greater than the indigenous Dreamtime, and greater than Satanists, witches, warlocks, and wizards. And one day, the Bible tells us, every knee will bow before Jesus and proclaim him as Lord to the glory of God the Father. The second reason why Jesus' resurrection matters to everyone is that every one of us feels the sting of death. We've either felt the sting of death or we will feel the sting of death. In this past week, some friends of mine who have served for decades as pastors in several churches in WA experienced the sudden death of their 21-year-old son, their only son. The depth of their grief is unfathomable, yet the light of resurrection penetrates the cavern of grief. They know that death is not the end because Jesus is Lord. My friend is a blogger. He's been blogging for 20 years. Here's a few lines from his online blog that was written this Friday, just gone. It was titled, The Final Voyage. On my previous blog, I tried to describe as concisely as I could my deepest convictions about life and faith. First and foremost was that God is good. Just in case you're wondering, I do not doubt that in the slightest. I also said that my hope is in the cross and the resurrection. Again, I'm reminded of the beautiful truth that there will be a final resurrection and we will once again share in life together. I know Sam, that's his son, shared that confidence and hope, but I'm devastated that his life ended too soon. On this day, my question for you is, have you surrendered to Jesus as Lord? And if your answer is no, my question is, will you do it today? And will you begin to live under his reign every day until he returns? I'm going to invite you all to stand now. I want us to conclude by praying a Lordship Prayer. Some of you have prayed it before, but some of you could be praying it for the very first time today with us. The words will come up on the screen behind me. I invite you to pray. Eternal God, I submit myself wholeheartedly to Jesus Christ as Lord of my whole being. Lord of my spirit and all my spiritual beliefs, interaction and worship. Lord of my mind, my attitudes, my thinking, my beliefs and my imagination. Lord of my emotions and my expression of my feelings. Lord of my will and all my decisions. Lord of my body, physical health, exercise, diet, rest and my appearance. Lord of my sexuality and its expression. Lord of my family and all my relationships. Lord of my paid work and voluntary service. Lord of my possessions and what I think I need. Lord of my finances. Lord of my plans, my ambitions and my future. Jesus, thank you that you laid down your life and suffered in my place to free me from the consequences of my sin, iniquity and rebellion. And I am now free to love, worship and obey you with all my heart, soul, mind and strength. Jesus, you are the one Lord of all creation, and I willingly submit my whole being completely to you today and forever. Amen.